He was a prophet, but he was also a priest. And there were others, like Jeremiah and Ezekiel, who were a prophet and a priest as well. He was familiar with priestly things. There are several passages in the book where there are things that are referenced that indicate that he had familiarity with them. He was a young man when he began prophesying. He was probably born in Babylonia in the captivity time and then returned to Palestine early in his life. Assumed probably about 536 B.C. with Zerubbabel and Joshua. He apparently survived or lived beyond the time of Joshua the high priest, since he became the head of his own division of priests in the days of Joachim, the son of Joshua. That's noted in Nehemiah 12, 1 and 8 and 10 and 12 and 16, so several verses in Nehemiah 12 there. He became a leading priest in the restoration community following after his grandfather, or again, possibly just ancestor, Iddo, who also returned from the captivity in 536 and was the leader of his priestly family, also referenced in Nehemiah 12. So you might need to go back and read Ezra and Nehemiah to get some background there. And then Ezra's father, or rather Zechariah's father, was Berechiah, but he was not apparently a prominent person. He may have even died young. We don't really have much information about him. There was more about his earlier predecessor, perhaps grandfather, Iddo. So then another question, what is the background and setting of the book? Well, we've kind of given some hints on that. It was at the time of the returned remnant, those that were coming back after the pronouncement by Cyrus that had been referenced, I think, in Ezra chapter 1 particularly. And what we want to recognize again is that Haggai and Zechariah were contemporaries, and they spoke to the same group. And they came after Ezekiel and Daniel, who had ministered during the captivity in Babylon. And so Zechariah began ministering among the Jews who had returned from the captivity in Babylon. And so they were part of the restoration community. And again, he was just 2 months, he began ministering and received his word from the Lord just 2 months after Haggai began preaching. And in a sense, Zechariah's message supplements that of Haggai. Haggai stressed the rebuilding of the temple as a sign and source of God's blessing. And Zechariah emphasized the role of repentance and renewal in achieving that end. So Zechariah is kind of working on the heart of the people to make sure their heart was right and not just following some external prescription. So the two prophets sort of complemented each other in that sense. Zechariah and Haggai also had contrasting ministries. There were some differences in their ministry style. The focus was a bit different between them. Haggai was seen as a builder, focused on providing the solid structure for the new temple as a place of worship and national identity. Zechariah may be seen as maybe more artistic in his adding symbolism and flair and character and maybe some additional light to the national context of that time frame. The two men also may be contrasted in another way, and that is that Haggai would be seen as more pragmatic in character. A doer, seeing things getting accomplished. Zechariah would be seen as more a visionary, almost a dreamer. And so there's the practical element, and there's a need for that. There's a need for somebody to make sure things happen, but there's also room for a visionary, someone to kind of hold up a vision of this is where we ought to go, this is what we ought to do. And so when you put the two of them together, they have somewhat more of a balanced view of things, and so it may be helpful to review something of Haggai as well. We've already alluded to the date of the book of Zechariah, but let's just note a couple of things. There are some textual indicators. Zechariah's preaching began in the 8th month of 520 B.C., and his eight visions, night visions that are going to be coming up in the book, took place 3 months later in the same year, but he's also noted as being a young man at the time. He delivered the messages of chapters 7 and 8 in 518 B.C., a couple of years later. There are some other noteworthy observations as well. Nehemiah mentioned Zechariah as the head of a priestly family when Joachim, who succeeded Joshua, was high priest. So there's another timing element there. This may be seen as late as during the reign of Artaxerxes I. That would be 464 to 424 B.C., and there are some who actually think that perhaps Nehemiah may have written the last chapters of Zechariah, chapters 9 through 14. I don't have enough detail to validate whether that's a worthwhile consideration or not. I assume, for the sake of argument, that Zechariah wrote all of it, but I allow that as a possibility. There are some things that are not as clearly defined as we might want them to be. But what we see here is that Zechariah is a servant of the Lord that was willing to be used by him, using his unique gifts and his abilities as an instrument to communicate in some interesting ways, as we will see. Then the purpose, themes, and structure of the book of Zechariah. The purpose, he wrote to motivate the people to complete the temple. He ministered again to the restoration community, trying to motivate them to finish the building of the temple. There are some projects that people start and they get weary of it for a variety of reasons, and sometimes they need some encouragement to press on and bring it to conclusion. There was an element of that, perhaps dealing with some discouragement, some opposition, some of the challenges that would have been faced. More will be considered as we press on down the road. He wrote to encourage the returned remnant, to spiritually encourage them, because they had been through a hard time of the captivity, and now they return to the land. They are weighed down with the challenges that they have to deal with there, and they are wondering, does the Lord still love us? Does he still care? What does he think about us? Is there any hope for us? What's going to happen after this? Are we going to be a nation again? Are we going to have any influence in our world? What can we expect? And so there's a need for encouraging them to rededicate themselves to the Lord, to allow him to bless them as they give of themselves to him. There's another element here. He wrote to broaden their messianic understanding. There are at least 10 figures that are identified with Jesus Christ as the Messiah in this passage. They include being on a red horse, chapter 1, viewed as a wall of fire, chapter 2, a branch, chapter 3, the Lord of the whole earth, chapter 4, the branch with two crowns, chapter 6, the King of Palm Sunday, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, chapter 9, the betrayed shepherd, chapter 11, the one pierced, chapter 12, the smitten one, chapter 13, the returning one, chapter 14. So you can see there's a lot of stuff that's in here, and hopefully you can see why then we are thinking of looking at the book of Zechariah after we had looked at the book of Daniel, because Daniel gave us basically a picture of those things that are going to be taking place relative to Christ's first coming and Christ's second coming. And Zechariah is going to be touching on many of those same details. Then the themes of Zechariah. A central theme of the book is encouragement and hope, and who doesn't need that? And the key to this hope is the coming of Messiah and his overthrow of the ungodly forces and the establishment of his kingdom on the earth. That's all anticipated for the future. That certainly would be a matter of hope for them. Again, they were in a tough time. They had been beaten down. They had been under the weight of other rulers around them. And so they needed some kind of hope, even though things didn't look like things were moving along all that well at this point. It was very slow in coming back and would be for quite some time. I mean, they still had to deal with another 500 years. So this hope was presented to them in terms of a need to continue to rebuild the temple, to restructure their community, to have their heart right with the Lord, to get things in an organized fashion, and to realize that the Lord wasn't finished with them, and he was going to work in and through them, and the Messiah is going to come through them as well. The theme of hope is exemplified in the book's strong messianic emphasis. In the process of communicating this hope, Zechariah dealt with the future of Israel, and particularly its distant eschatological future. And he does so to an extent that even surpasses many of the other Old Testament prophets in terms of the specificity and the anticipation of that which is to come with some clarity. His message also included a number of revelations regarding the future day of the Lord, and that had various messianic insights in that as well. In addition, there were several key prophecies in Zechariah, those regarding the Messiah, those regarding Israel, and as we go through the book, you will recognize, wow, this book is loaded with messianic prophecies that have significance. Then, looking at the genre and structure of the book, genre has to do with the type of literature, the way in which things are communicated. The type of literature style that's involved. And what we note is that there is a mixture of genres in the book. It's not just one form. It's not just a recitation of history. It has a combination of poetry, exhortations, like sermonic kinds of messages, prophetic, apocalyptic visions, and we'll be talking more about apocalyptic literature. Basically has the idea of a form of revelation, symbolic actions, oracles, those kinds of things are there. And some of the oracles introduce or follow visions, others do not, so there's a combination of things. Zechariah, along with Ezekiel and Daniel and Revelation, is one of the most apocalyptic books in the Bible. These apocalyptic visions of Zechariah are filled with symbolism, though they're not quite as complicated and some would say bizarre as Ezekiel. If you've read through Ezekiel recently, you'll be reminded there's some pretty interesting stuff in there. And if you want to stretch your imagination a bit, you can certainly do that. Some of the things that are communicated require angelic interpreters, at least in chapters 1 through 6. There's a lot of imagery that has interesting elements to it that we'll be considering. But again, a lot of future-focused elements are communicated here. The structure provided is in three main sections. The first section contains eight night visions, and then their accompanying oracles that are communicated. The second section includes messages that are prompted about a question about fasting. And then the third section contains two burdens or types of oracles that introduce the triumphant interventions of the Lord into history in the future. And that's kind of a broad way of trying to indicate what is going to be coming to them. But then, of course, it's preceded by that introduction that we just looked at earlier. Interesting also that Zechariah is one of the longest of the minor prophets. It contains 14 chapters with 211 verses. Hosea is the second longest. It also has 14 chapters and 197 verses. In comparison, Daniel is the shortest of the major prophets and contains 12 chapters with 357 verses. There will be a quiz at the end. I'm hoping you'll remember all those details. Then, looking at the outline and summary of the book. Actually, if you could just read all of this right here, you'll have it. That's a chart that Chuck Swindoll put together a long time ago. I just happened to find that in looking for something to put with this. So the introduction is chapter 1, verses 1 through 6. And then there are the eight night visions and four messages that are 1, 7 to 6, 8. And there are different ways of doing the outline. This is the rough outline that I'm using for the present. And there's a breakout of another particular part here, the symbolic crowning of Joshua. Not everybody breaks this out, but this outline does that, chapter 6, verses 9 through 15, because it has a little bit of a different focus to it. The messages concerning hypocritical fasting, chapters 7 and 8. And then oracles about the Messiah and Israel's future. And that would be chapters 9 through 14. So that's just a little bit of a rough skeleton of an outline. There's obviously a whole lot more to it, but sometimes it's helpful to just get a little bit of a glimpse of an overview so that we can have a better understanding of it. So then with that, I want to give a concluding summary regarding the book. A few things just to sort of stand out to our thinking. Consider the general context. Zechariah is the second post-exilic prophetic book after Haggai and before Malachi. The historical background and the audience are the same as for Haggai, so same people group, same basic time frame. Those in Zechariah's day tended to look back at their former glory and their recent shame of losing everything, of being brought to a foreign land, of experiencing the discipline of the Lord. As they looked forward with that history in the background, it was difficult for them to see much hope, and they were in discouragement. So part of what Zechariah is trying to do is to encourage them to not just wallow in their despair, but to buck up and move forward, to realize that there's something more. The Lord is not done with them. And so Zechariah was ministering to them to inspire hope in their hearts in the time of their discouragement, a difficult time for them. And I think we don't have to look too hard to realize that, you know, we're kind of in a similar place right now. We look at our nation, we think, well, the best times are behind us. Things don't look that bright. You look to the future and we're going, you know, what's going to happen? What's left? We can use a word of encouragement. We don't know exactly what the future holds in terms of the details of our present time. We know what the bigger picture is, but we should take heart as well. Then understand the overall emphasis. Zechariah delivered his first message between Haggai's first and second messages, and his purpose was the same as Haggai's, that is, to motivate the restoration community to finish rebuilding the temple. Zechariah followed this first message with eight visions, which were intended to inspire, again, hope in the people. The thought was, well, why should we rebuild the temple if there's really no future for us? And all of this is to say, there is a future for you. Don't just sit on your hands. Do something. God is not finished. And I think we need to be reminded of that as well. God is not finished with us. Our time isn't over. Things may be a little messy at present in many ways, but we're not finished either. He then explained the present issues with the fast that the people were celebrating, that they weren't doing it in a way that was appropriate. They needed to look at it from the right perspective. And then the final oracles here also were intended to provide hope for the future as it related to the coming of the Messiah. And when this was written for them, there was the anticipated coming of the Messiah the first time, but they didn't necessarily have that distinction. We know we're living in between the two comings, and we still anticipate the Messiah's return as well. Also, well, I jumped ahead a bit. Oh, can you put it back on that other slide there, Mike? The place where I just was, if you can find it. Understand the overall emphasis and then recognize the future focus. Many writers on Zechariah have called this book the Apocalypse of the Old Testament because it reveals so much about Israel's future, particularly the Messiah's place in her future. The whole book is basically a revelation regarding the incredible power of God and his persistent purpose for his people. Zechariah revealed things about the future of the Jews that gave his discouraged contemporaries hope. So they really needed that. They were at a time of discouragement. And so there was this particular emphasis on don't give up, keep pressing on, move forward. And again, a good reminder for us. The nation doesn't look very hopeful, so should we just give up? No. Things may not look that hopeful for us, but we don't give up either. We continue to press on. And then the last element here, appreciate the emphasis on the Lord of hosts. We saw in the introduction, the introductory verses, verse 3, return to me that I may return to you, says the Lord. The Lord has a desire for that. He's encouraging them. So that's an emphasis that that we see communicated in the book as well.
That's all the slides.
So as we think about this, I'm simply reminded that we're not that much in a different scenario, in a different situation than what Zechariah's contemporaries were. A time where the times of glory that we had seen in our nation seemed to be in the past. And what we see coming in the future does not look that good. Is there nothing left to fight for? Is there any hope? is there any future? And Zechariah was saying to them, yes, there is. The Lord is still at work. He is still bringing things to pass. There is a lot that has yet to take place. And we need to recognize that same thing. We have good reason to be encouraged. We are living in an age of some incredible things that are going on. Some things that are not so good, but also there are many opportunities that we have to live out what we've been called to do, to have a message of hope for a world that is in serious trouble if it doesn't have that message of hope. God is still in control. He is still the master and Lord of all. And we have a purpose in the time in which we live. Regardless of what the circumstances may look like, that was the problem that the people of Zechariah's day had. They looked at the circumstances and thought, well, this is terrible. You know, things are just not looking good. Whether it be politically, socially, you go down the list, economically, and on, but it's not over. We still have much to do, and we need to take each day as an opportunity to live out the message of hope that we have in Christ. And so we press on for the Lord.